Welcome to the Casual Temple Podcast, episode 25, and I'm your host, Marilee Duffy. At the Casual Temple, our mission is to discover our connection to the unseen world of spirit and how that empowers us to know our true selves. A little favor before we begin, please follow or subscribe and hit that heart-shaped like button on your favorite podcast platform. On the episode today, I'm so thrilled to have Joanna, also known as the Polish Folk Witch, as our guest. Joanna shares with us her animist, folklore, and ancestor-based magic, which involves the deep folk traditions of Poland. We learn how Joanna, at the very young age of 3, was communicating with spirits, then how mystical experiences led to her discovering her path of witchcraft and spirit work. Joanna has a really robust and active Patreon, and I encourage you all to check out all the cool work she and her members are doing there. So stay tuned to the Casual Temple Podcast, where it's Halloween every day. Welcome to the Casual Temple. This week, we welcome our guest, Joanna, also known as the Polish Folk Witch. Joanna is an animist, practitioner of folkloric traditional Joanna is an animist, practitioner of folkloric traditional witchcraft and Polish folk magic. Joanna is also a writer, psychologist, content creator, art therapist, and artist, as well as an autogenic training facilitator, and much, much more in addition to all of that. It's amazing. So I'm so honored to have Joanna on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. And I know that was a mouthful of of an introduction. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being so patient with me stumbling over a little bit of it. But it's amazing, like so much stuff you do. And I just want to like fangirl a little bit. You have a really wonderful Patreon. I know we're going to talk about that for sure. But it's wow, you just, the stuff you offer, I've never seen it in some in other Patreons that I have, and it's so well thought out and considered, and anyway, it's just wonderful. So I thank you so much for having that available for people.
Thank you so much. I'm really grateful and always like happy to hear how people actually respond to what I put out there, because I know that's like a lot of different pockets of things that I offer. So yeah. It's not for everybody, but I'm happy to be talking about this some more today as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely, me personally, I see where all the different things, but they overlap quite well, in my opinion, my little opinion on that.
Glad to hear.
Yeah. Okay. So we're just going to jump in. To, you know, a little topic of what was there an event in your life that put you on the current either spiritual or magical path that you're on today?
Mm-hmm. I think I could answer this a few different ways, but yeah. I guess I'm going to answer this from the perspective of the path that I follow, which is folk magic and traditional witchcraft. Mm-hmm. And when you look at how the traditional lore describes those kinds of experiences that put people on their paths, for me, that would be very, very early on in my life, actually, when I was only 3 years old, which was a strange happening where I woke up in the middle of the night and I saw the devil, which I know sounds crazy.
Yeah.
But that's what was my first that I actually remember. My wow. first kind of encounter with the spirit world. And I have to say that from that point on, until today, spirit work and spirit contact has been something that's always been present for me. And it kind of forced me in a way to take up on the path of witchcraft, learn how to kind of maybe work with, control what I can see, feel, hear, and so on. So, I feel like I didn't have much choice in a way in becoming a witch, which I know I'm not the only one to feel this way. I know for certain people, like it differs. Some people choose this. Some people are kind of forced by initiatory experiences. Some people may be born into it through, you know, family members who kind of teach them this stuff. For me, it was kind of, as I said, just something that happened to me very early on, and I had no choice but to adapt to the reality that was presented to me. And that's basically how I've been kind of rolling for the past 30 plus years of my life. So yeah, I don't want to go into detail about the sure. kind of experience that it was, because initiatory experiences can be very trippy And when you explain it to people, like, you know, the UPG stuff, personal gnosis, it basically sounds like you're tripping on something. But I'm sure people who are into witchcraft can pretty much imagine what this could look like. So I'm just going to stop myself at this.
Oh yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I think the only person I really talk to for the most part is my husband, right? Because he knows me and we talk all the time. So yeah, so it is. And then when I have told other people, I'm like, ooh, sounding a little, yeah, I can see how this sounds weird. Yeah, so I get where you're coming
Yep,
from.
relatable.
Yeah, exactly. So kind of with that, did you have support or guidance, you know, as a 3-year-old? Like, did you have people in your life that were helpful for you, or even as you got older, is there some
You
support there?
know, I would like to differentiate here also, like having experiences that early on does not actually like automatically mean that I've been a witch since 3 years old. So that needs to be said, because I know some people get like those ideas that's what I might be thinking. Definitely not. But I started practicing. I chose this path consciously when I was around 15 years old. And at that point, I didn't really have access to people who could actually guide me in this. So, you know, it was the usual books, whatever I learned from spirits. And my own discernment, I guess. And that continued for a very long time. I always used to be somebody who's not a huge fan of authorities and trusting in figures to, you know, bestow knowledge upon you and basically relying on like gurus and that kind of stuff. So for the longest time, I've been solitary and just learning from books and experience. In my late 20s, I decided to be more open and join a coven, which was my experience for a few years. So that's where I guess gained some human guidance for the first time. And that was really enlightening in ways that I think I wouldn't be able to otherwise access. But since then, it's been some time since I kind of came back to being solitary. And I have to say that for the most part, there wasn't much support or guidance for me to be able to access throughout life in general.
Oh, okay. Wow, what a cool path. Yeah, I definitely, again, I resonate with sort of the authority figure thing. you know, from I'm sure you could relate as well as like lived experience of like hearing the things that they say, and you're like, that is not right. I just know
Yep,
it in my bones.
exactly.
Yeah, it's not right.
Yep. That's something that's really hard to kind of get over because
Yeah.
at one point, like, nobody likes to be alone. Nobody likes to have to do all of this
Yeah.
without having people to trust and to compare stuff with, etc. But at the other hand, like, you can see so many people taking advantage of other people in the spiritual circles in general. It's just hard to trust.
I agree. I can't say it any better. So my next question is pretty funny because I know that you read a lot.
I do.
You read a lot. I remember like either a post or somewhere in Discord that you had mentioned like how many books you read it, you know, all the time, like at a time. And I was like, yeah, it's a lot. So my next question, what were some of your favorite books that kind of did sort of help you along your path that you can want to
I
mention?
prepared for this actually because I want to make sure that I not only talk about some books and authors, but also show some books
Oh, cool.
about the topics mostly that we're going to be talking about today, which is anyway like most of what I do and what I'm interested in. So, starting with Polish folk magic, because that's like the main thing I do and talk about, I want to say like 90% of my reading material sadly is not available in English. It's only in my native language, which is Polish. And a lot of that is, you know, actually not books written by fellow practitioners. It's mostly books written by researchers, so like ethnographers, anthropologists, folklorists, that kind of stuff. And I find that you can kind of glean the most out of that kind of material because they
Yeah.
try and preserve many of the practices from way, way, way back in an unchanged and uninterpreted form. So then you can kind of make up your own mind about that. But I do have two books that are actually also available in English for people who are specifically interested in Polish folk magic or kind of the Polish flavor of traditional witchcraft. And that would be, let me just grab them. First and foremost, this book, I don't know how well this is seen here, probably not that well. It's called Between the Devil and the Host: Imagining Witchcraft in Early Modern Poland by Michael Osling. This book is a treasure trove, seriously, when it comes to the practices of Polish witches, the kind of heretical stuff that they did and they believed in. And also the kind of summary of witch trial records and all of that. It's really, really juicy. It's not maybe so easily available because I have to say, like academic works, which both of the books I'm going to be talking about here in this context are academic, they are kind of harder to get or more expensive, which honestly sucks that academia kind of places itself somewhere above like the average, person and makes it less accessible for people outside of academia. But it is what it is. But if you are into Polish folk magic and want to read something in English, I think it's worth the investment. So this one and the other one, I just need to open this because I actually have a Polish translation of a book written in English by a Polish person.
All
It's
right.
confusing, I know. So, let me just see. Yeah, so the original title is Witchcraft in Early Modern Poland, from 1500s to 1800s by Wanda Wyborska. This is what the Polish edition looks like. But the original is actually in English. And same, this one provides a lot of that kind of juicy historical material when it comes to, spells, the approach of Polish witches, as well as a lot of kind of historical and social context of how that magic developed in this particular region. So I find both of these being very valuable for people who want to dig into this stuff. If you want to be a folk witch, you need to be kind of prepared to dig into a lot of obscure sources and find that stuff and then document it for yourself or catalog it for yourself to be able to actually use it in practice. So that's when it comes to Polish folk magic. Now, moving on to animism, because this is something we're going to be talking about today as well. This book, this is a classic, Animism: Respecting the Living World by Graham Harvey. This is like the base for if you are interested in animism, this is the first book you should probably reach for. It was just recently reprinted in a much more kind of affordable version, the one that I have here actually. And it explains all you need to know about animism and compares like different cultures for you to be able to understand how animism works in different cultures around the world. So very, very valuable. Now, moving on to more witchy stuff, I guess, that I really like in English. I'm going to be mentioning authors and just showcasing one book by each of them because otherwise we would be here forever. But my three fave authors in English for traditional witchcraft slash folk magic would be, first of all, Roger J. Horn. And here I have Folk Witchcraft. This book is kind of like a foundational book for this kind of practice in English. I highly recommend it. It's very accessible, very easy to read, and very kind of open for people. No matter what culture you come from, you can use this book to kind of create a foundation in folk magic practice for yourself. The next author would be Lee Morgan. And here I have one example of his work, A Deed Without a Name. This is kind of an introduction into traditional witchcraft lore. I find that this book, and I've seen it in action, it can change minds. Literally, if somebody doesn't understand the whole, interest that's happening right now when it comes to folk magic and traditional witchcraft, if they read this book, I am pretty sure that they will understand and maybe even get converted, you could say, quote unquote. So definitely recommend, because it explains a lot of the things that are not really talked about that much, I guess, and explained in many of those books. And lastly, also Claude Lecoteau. This is a French author, but many of his books are translated. This is just one example, Demons and Spirits of the Land, but he has a lot of publications. They are also kind of more academic, where he talks about basically lore of the land, of the spirits, folklore, stories, traditions from all around Europe usually, and kind of creates comparisons between different traditions in specific European regions, which I find all of his books are just great if you want to gain a wide perspective on folk traditions and thus also practices of traditional witchcraft. And that's pretty much it when it comes to the things that I want to recommend today. Those authors, definitely, I think if you start with them, you're going to save yourself a lot of time kind of sifting through the books that are available these days, because there's just so much, honestly.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I definitely am like, now I need like this new stack of books to read, because they all sound so cool. Yeah, thank you for that recommendation. Oh my gosh.
Of course.
I did kind of want to, I didn't want to go off track of like talking about sort of where I'm coming from, but just to kind of relate. So my mother is Filipino and my dad is Irish American. And so both of those cultures, and this, I'm going somewhere with this, but both of those cultures have had sort of like, you know, because of colonialism, has had a lot of their traditional practices kind of just lost, quote unquote, lost for the most part. But I kind of feel like maybe with your practice, a lot of it is, and you're, you know, it's like through folklore and that, like, I think a lot of that could just really be, you know, looking at the stories of the land and the people. I think you can kind of, you know, mine that as like a Filipino, excuse me, as a Filipino American or as a Irish American, to kind of build like a new, not identity necessarily, but like a new practice, because it feels like it's totally gone, but maybe it isn't, you know?
You know, I think these days we don't talk as much about stories anymore. And I feel like the younger people are not so much interested in listening to their grandmas and grandpas, hearing about their lived experiences, the things that they were taught, the things that they believed about the land, about how certain things are done in the household or in the family. So I feel like that is the main reason for why things may feel like they are lost. But if we get interested, if we get out there to the actual community of like your diaspora, for example, and ask the elders, they have so much wisdom, so much knowledge to bestow on us. Everywhere around the world, really. And even here in Poland, it's not like everybody is born and automatically gets all this knowledge. It's not like that. I know that often when I talk to people from the Polish diaspora, they kind of assume that if you are here, then you know everything by default. Right. It's not like that, really, because like the modern times are a thing everywhere in the world. And here as well, the younger generation doesn't really care about these things as much. Mm-hmm. So it takes effort, time, and actually, as I said, going out there and asking the elders, looking for those stories, listening to them to recover that, to, as you say, kind of be able to build a practice off of that and to, I think, get rooted really into your identity as coming from a specific culture, of having a specific ancestry. So yeah, I totally agree with you that that's how it goes. But I feel like it's not only an issue in the US, you know, for people who migrated, but for everybody globally.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Beautifully said. Yeah. I definitely, I love that you were like, go talk to your grandma and grandpa, maybe talk to your mom or your dad. You know, they might have some great information too. That's, I love that. Thank you. Okay. So, you know, we kind of touched a little bit about your current path. If you can kind of give us a little bit of an idea of what your path looks like, meaning like kind of what do you do either daily or, you know, monthly or like something, if that makes sense.
to do that.
Of course, yeah. So what I do, as I mentioned, is folk magic and traditional witchcraft. So that means that my practice is very much rooted in the land, in bioregional processes that occur, the seasons, kind of observing the nature around you and actually interacting with it, not just reading about it on Wikipedia, you know. So it is, a lot of it has to do with forging connections with the world around you. And I'm going to touch more on this when we talk about animism, because I feel like animism really is at the root of traditional witchcraft and of folk magic. So without the kind of foundation of perceiving the world as a living organism that we are part of, I feel like the practice of witchcraft is kind of empty. So saying that this way, I know it may seem controversial to some, but when you read witchcraft material and folk magic material, especially the kind of more historical sources, you will find out that spirit work is really at the core, that everything the witch does, it's not like you are some kind of superhero with, you know, extra powers that nobody else possesses. We are all the same. We all can do this stuff, but it's not something that you do as an individual because you have power, because you are powerful. It's something that you do as a result of having relations with spirits, with the land, with the plants, with your ancestors, with your roots, right? So that's kind of the foundation of my practice. What it looks like day to day, I usually, on a regular basis, because I'm forging those relationships and cultivating them, that means I will definitely be giving offerings to my ancestors, to the household spirits, to the spirits of the land, and spirits kind of residing in specific places in wilderness, where I also kind of have forged those connections. I will be feeding that relationship by giving them offerings and gifts to, you know, it's kind of like forging a friendship with somebody. You just want to make sure that they know that you love them, care for them. That's a big part for sure. That's something that you always do. You always remember to give those offerings and thanks. Other than that, seasonal practices. So some people, and it's very popular to talk about the wheel of the year and how you practice those sabbats. It's about around the wheel of the year. In folk magic, it's a bit different. You are not really practicing those eight sabbats in particular. It's mostly practicing kind of holy days that are particular to your culture. So for example, for me as a Polish folk witch, that means that I would be celebrating like saints days, like feast days of specific saints, because if you know a bit more, you know that the saints before they were saints, they were actually land spirits that were kind of turned or syncretized to become saints post-Christianization. And the same when it comes to the main kind of Christian and specifically here Catholic celebrations that are seasonal, which overlap with the Wheel of the Year, by the way. So, you know, Christmas, of course, would be the winter solstice. And like, I don't know, Ostara would be, we call Ostara Jaregody, by the way, that would be like related to Easter and all of that stuff. Like, this is common knowledge, I think. But in folk magic, you are not really drawing from like outside sources. For example, I wouldn't be celebrating the Celtic Wheel of the Year because I am not Celtic and it does not apply to the land where I live. So, basically, what I'm trying to say here is that you are celebrating the changes in the land and kind of going through the cycles as you age and as you kind of go through life. So does everybody and everything around you, right? The land, the plants, the animals, and you kind of celebrate life through that, through the cycles of the seasons. And so they will always be kind of a bit different depending on where you live, because the main thing that determines how you practice is how your land is actually responding to the seasonal changes, which is different everywhere, depending on, you know, the geographical location. So that's why the bioregionalism of folk magic is so important in my practice. And other than that, some of the things that I also do would have to be a lot of trance work because it's kind of foundational for spirit communication. So, we are also, I think, gonna be touching on this a bit more later, but spirit flight, flying to the Sabbat, kind of communing with spirits outside of where you are. So, in folk magic and traditional witchcraft, it's not so common to actually be calling spirits to you, which is very popular, like in ceremonial magic, for example, right? Where you are invoking or evoking spirits to your space, to the circle or to the triangle. In folk magic, you usually go to them instead. So it's not always like everything needs to be around me, coming to me. I'm not the center of the universe. On the contrary, I'm just a, tiny, tiny being who wants to cultivate right relations with the land and with other beings. So I need to be doing some work for that and maybe going to those spirits instead of them coming to me, if that makes sense. So yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of also working through, the ancestral stuff, to put it very broadly, which means not only cultivating relations with the ancestors, but also working through the inherited things, like traumas, like some behaviors that might be ingrained in your bloodline, basically to heal that, right? So there's that aspect as well. I'm trying to think if there's anything major that I missed. Of course, divination and like cultivating all those skills that I think any magical practitioner cultivates. I also do that too. So, yeah, I think that's about it, really.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I love the description around creating relationships with the land. Yeah. And especially your specific land, because, it is so different. You have different plants, you have different animals, the shape of the land is different. And I live in Seattle, so that's something where there's a lot of like understanding as what Seattle is if you don't live here, and then there is the understanding of what Seattle is if you do live here. And the spirits of the land here are very strong, like very, very strong and very vocal. So yeah, I love that you put it that way because I think there's maybe a disconnect for a lot of people of like putting those two things together. So thank you for walking us through that. That was awesome.
Yeah, I hope I wasn't too rambly, but I know
No.
it's kind of a lot to explain in some ways, but yeah, I think the land connection is really at the base of many of those practices.
And thanks for walking through like how especially being in Poland, how it's different than your Polish traditional witchcraft is different than like other people's, I guess. So that was very cool.
I'm glad.
Yeah. So what would you say? Because there's a lot of I don't know, either a misconception or sort of broad brushing of what witchcraft is. What do you believe is the most important thing to understand about witchcraft that maybe people don't get?
Okay. I think witchcraft became a really popular term to use, and also the label of the witch became very popular for people to apply to themselves as part of their identity. And I think with that, what witchcraft is became very expansive, I guess, to the point where I guess people don't really differentiate that much anymore between paths of the occult, broadly speaking, where somebody might be practicing like ceremonial magic but call themselves a witch, which technically is not the same thing, right? Like if you practice ceremonial magic, this has very different foundations than witchcraft. And I'm not like trying to compare which path is better or worse, because that's not a thing. But I think we became kind of loose with those labels. And as a result of that, witchcraft became pretty much anything you make of it. Online, I mean, at least when people talk about it, it's often kind of discussed that, you're not supposed to tell other people if they can or cannot identify as witches, which I think fair enough. I'm not here like to police anybody's life practice or anything, but I think sometimes people forget to kind of research what does this actually mean? Where does this term come from? You know, the kind of basics. Because if you do that, if you check what historically what witchcraft is, it's a practice that is very much rooted in the land and usually was practiced by people who were of the kind of lower layers of society, right? So like the peasants, the you know, farmers, the kind of simple folk, you could say. Whereas other practices like ceremonial magic, for example, right, which we were just kind of comparing, that was mostly reserved for people who could read, who had an education, who had access to stuff that was expensive, like being able to import, you know, some incense from the other side of the globe, etc. So that was basically kind of reserved for people who were privileged. Whereas witchcraft, the opposite of that. And I feel like these days, these things are not really perceived through this lens anymore. And I think in some ways that's great that anything is accessible to anybody. Like, for example, you don't have to be rich to be able to practice ceremonial magic anymore because everybody has access to things due to capitalism and globalization, right? But anyway, coming back to the whole witchcraft thing and what I think is kind of the most important to understand about witchcraft is that it's rooted in the land, it's rooted in animism, it's rooted in the simple connections that don't really require you to have like a big brain, big education, you know, so sort of background to be able to cultivate. It's available to everybody. It's a way to be able to improve your life where you have nothing else at your disposal, where you have no privilege, you have no access to maybe even like basic needs in your life to have them fulfilled. That's where witchcraft comes in. And I think that's what needs to be remembered about this practice, that really, at the end of the day, it's between you and the land and nothing else really, right? So nobody can really stand in your way, in your path when it comes to that.
Wow, beautifully explained. Yeah, I love that you also drew the connections of like the historical basis of it and how it was for people who couldn't travel or get goods from far away, and you literally are building that connection with the things around you and the beings and the land. So, yeah,
Yeah, because when
good.
you look at it, like the basic practices of those paths, I'm comparing the two because they have like the most kind of contrast between them. Like the basic practices of ceremonial magic take hours a day, like to commune with your holy guardian angel. You need to be like celibate for 18 months. You need to have like a separate house where you can be alone and do these things for like 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the evening, every single day for a prolonged period of time. Like who can afford that? Only like some, you know, old rich guys somewhere. You know what I mean? Whereas witchcraft, when you look at the historical aspects of it, it's like protection magic to make sure that you don't die, your family doesn't die, your cattle doesn't die, like your house doesn't burn down. Basically that kind of stuff. It's survival. It comes from survival and like making sure that we can at least believe that we have some chances of surviving in a world where you have no access to medicine, no access to education, no access to like living with dignity a lot of the times. So these backgrounds, like when you compare them, it's two different worlds. And I think that needs to be remembered.
Oh, yeah. Beautifully explained. Thank you for walking us through that. That's amazing.
You.
Yeah, so I did have this question, and I'm like, oh gosh. So I feel like it kind of goes in because I feel like I know what the answer is. And as an American, apparently, I need to have you talk about us. So the question is, what is something that you feel like you, as an observer of American Western culture, like what do you feel could be beneficial for us to be more balanced? Because being in it myself, it's looks like it's very unbalanced. So I have my own opinions about that, but I'm just curious what yours would be.
Observing it from the outside, I think that the history of the United States is kind of unfortunate in the way that most of the people, aside from the natives, of course, are people who came from somewhere else. So most people in America seem like they are very desperate to grasp to some roots. feel rootless in a way and kind of desperately trying to connect to their ancestry. I understand why, because when I look at my connections with the land, with the ancestors, etc., I have to admit it's hard for me to imagine just moving across the world somewhere and just leaving all of this behind. So I understand this kind of pain and ache that comes with the feelings of being rootless, being away from those ancestral places. I feel like what's missing a lot of the times, and I know this is difficult, and I don't try to come off here as having answers, because I wouldn't dare, honestly. But I think you guys need to find ways to be able to connect with the land where you are, and kind of be accepted as part of that land, you know, because I feel people often are kind of scared maybe of connecting with the land, seeing it as maybe disrespectful to the Native Americans, which of course is fair enough. But also when you look at it, like I just recently learned that apparently in some states you're not allowed to even forage things like in the wilderness. To me, that's crazy, because I can like go to the forest and I can forage, you know, the fruits, the mushrooms, whatever I find, the herbs, right? And it's okay. It's legal. Whereas in some spaces in America, it seems to be illegal to do that, which just strips you of this basic human right to be able to connect with the land, to craft medicine from things that grow near you, right? To be able to actually engage with the land around you. Like, if that's illegal, oh my God, like, I can just imagine the side effects of that for the human psyche, for your well-being, you know? So I know that this is something that's probably really hard to solve, because that would take legal changes, right? The changes in politics, which is really difficult to do something about where you're just a regular person. But seeing that from the outside, to me, that's really heartbreaking and unfortunate to witness. And when I talk about this with people who kind of engage with me and they share their stories of trying to connect back with the land here and like trying to find out more about their ancestry and like their great grandma and where she lived and what she did here, you know, stuff like that. I feel like the balance is somewhere in between, like connecting with the land where you are and also incorporating the kind of history and stories of the people who are your ancestors who came where you are right now. Okay. So that's how I see this. I know that this is probably not perfect and missing a lot of context, because I'm an outsider for you, but that's the best I can come up with.
Oh yeah. Wow. I like that you talked about sort of, I was like, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, you're right. Like, we can't really go into the forest and, you know, take plants, you know. If I even said that to somebody here in Seattle, they'd be like, of course you can't. Of course, why would you do that? Like, it's, you know. So yeah, I didn't even think about that. That's a really good perspective. I love
it. So I don't know, to me it's crazy that you can only engage with the land if you purchased it.
Yes, I know.
That's just, wow, that's just mind-blowing and heartbreaking simultaneously to me.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up. It's good to think about. Okay, so we're going to talk about a very small subject, and is animism. And so you've definitely touched on it already, but can you kind of help describe it for somebody like who might be not even heard of the word before?
Okay, I will probably go on a tangent here, because I feel like it's an important subject, and I feel like for me personally, it's important to make as many people aware of this as possible. I'm not here to like convert or anything, just to, you know, preface this, but basically what animism is the kind of, I suppose, normative consciousness that you are born with, but is stripped from you very early on in your life. And this animism is basically the kind of perception of the world where you recognize that the world is absolutely full of living beings, not all of which are humans. So this includes everything, everybody you can think of. That means animals, plants, spirits that are kind of non-material, you could say, spirits of places, of inanimate objects like rocks, for example, right? You could go into many, many, many categories here, but to boil it down is the belief that the world is inhabited again by many beings, and humans are only a small fraction of all of those beings. And this is not all of it, because the other very important part of animism is not only recognizing that aliveness, but also trying to be a good neighbor, a good friend, trying to forge actual kind of respectful relationships with all of those beings around you. So the way an animist lives is usually that you take into consideration not only your own good and the good of the humans around you, but also all of the other beings around you. That means that you would usually be very like environmentally conscious and stuff like that. This is how I could kind of boil it down to make sure to kind of understand the basics of what animism is. But really, when you look at it this way, it changes the entire way that you are living your life and relating to everything around you. It's not so easy anymore if you recognize that, you know, humans are not basically at the center of it, are not the most important. So human centrism goes out the window right away. And it's not so easy anymore to just go out into the world and trample everything around you and not care for its well-being, because you recognize that it's alive and requires respect, basically. So when we look at the way that the Western world is living these days, and I mean, when I'm saying the Western world, I'm not just saying like, you know, I mean, Eastern Europe, so that doesn't concern me. No, I'm part of that as well. The Western world, in the way I'm trying to say here, is people who are non-indigenous, basically. So not living by those ways that are connected with the land where they have been living for many generations. That's like 95% of humanity, or maybe more, that are living in the Western culture, you could say, in a way. Which is non-animistic, which is based in like capitalism and basically like recognizing money as more important to be taken care of than, you know, all the living beings, including us as well. So I guess maybe that's how I would explain it, I think. And speaking of books, I just remember I have one more actually. This is actually connected to this.
Oh, nice.
If somebody doesn't like reading like more academic sources when it comes to this, and I have to say, like, when it comes to animism, there's not many non-academic sources yet. They are like coming out pretty much every month right now, but it's only been like maybe a year or two that this has really been picked up. But if you enjoy fiction and would like to engage in something that's just easier to digest, I would recommend this book, which is from the 90s, actually. This is by Daniel Quinn, The Story of Bee, which is a very interesting story of somebody who's basically going to, it's an American guy who's going to Germany to preach animism, but nobody knows what this is because nobody heard about it before. And some Catholic like orders or whatever kind of learn about this guy and think that he's the Antichrist. So they send somebody over to investigate. And that's where the whole story kind of revolves around. And I feel like this book is really engaging. It's super easy to read, but it explains to you so much about the background. And one thing that I'd like to touch on that's actually like so well explained in this book is how animism, where did it really cease being a thing? Because like it didn't happen overnight, right? And what's proposed in this book and the sources I've read that are more academic also kind of support that, is that the moment we entered the era of the kind of agrarian revolution. So basically, we stopped being hunter-gatherers and we became farmers. That's where the whole change occurred, because as soon as we were as long as we were hunter-gatherers, we were not really there weren't that many of us. We were kind of more, you could think about it this way, like there were maybe 20,000 humans, 20,000 deer, 20,000 toads, and so on. So it was kind of more evenly spread out, and humans had this understanding that they are part of something, a very small part of something, and they have to coexist. Whereas with the agrarian revolution, when that occurred, it also helped people grow massively. So the numbers, because of the easy access to food, we started growing so much that we kind of forgot that we were at some point, just a small fraction of all of the living beings, and we became the majority to the point where we forgot that the rest of the creation also matters and should be respected. I really love this explanation because it kind of gives you background on how this could have potentially happened, and the fact that when you look at our culture, it was developed starting after the agrarian revolution. So we really don't even have like thinkers from before that. We don't have records of, philosophers. Like you usually learn about like ancient Greek philosophers and those kinds of dudes. They were already living in a time where they didn't even know that there was something before the agrarian revolution. So they were born thinking that man was born to rule the earth, and everything that's kind of put on the earth, like animals, plants, everything is just there for us to use to our advantage. And that's where we are today. And I think it really didn't go well like 10,000 years later.
You're like, oh, we didn't have the long view with this
Yeah,
group.
I guess. But I mean, you can't really blame them, right? But we know that now, and I think we can create change. But it's probably gonna be hard because, like, you would kind of have to dismantle, like,
Just little things.
capitalism.
Just little tiny things.
Yeah.
For sure.
But I hope like this is giving your listeners a broader view on those issues and how it kind of all started.
I can't. I let you gave such a great encapsulated sort of thing based on this book, which again, now it's added to the stack that I'm going to be reading, which is great. About like the agrarian society, right? That's 100%. I've heard that kind of before, but not explained as well. So thank you. That was great.
Yeah, happy to nerd out about
I
this.
know. It's like my favorite. Oh my gosh.
And I mean, this even, sorry, I'm just gonna add this because
Yes,
I'm like
please.
such a nerd, but this also like impacted our spirituality so heavily, because like with the agrarian revolution, people started praising mostly like agrarian gods, so those gods that help you, have abundance and make sure that things grow, etc. Whereas before that, when people were still hunters and gatherers, they would mostly revere deities that had to do with making sure that the hunt is good, that the animals that they are hunting, that those animals breed in numbers that help them replenish, etc. Right? So you can kind of see that this also impacts not only, capitalism and the kind of easy access to everything in life that you have right now, but also our perception of spirituality and the deities that we work with and the spirits that we relate to, etc. So it's like a complete shift in consciousness really for humans, where at the beginning, before the revolution, you kind of had people who were coming from the animist perspective as a normative consciousness. This wasn't even something that those people would be naming as animism, right? They weren't really aware that they were animists. We can only see that now from the perspective of today. Whereas, from that, we came to people who are kind of disconnected from the broader world and mostly concerned with ourselves and this, I would say, even toxic individuality, where it's all about you, about your comfort and the comfort of the people you love at best, right? So very different.
My goodness. I can't not agree enough, because like I yeah, and I love that you put that together, because I think I had read something, or somebody had recommended a book about like Rome, Rome, right? And like the central, it's very patriarchal. It's about the family, and then like that's about it, right? Like, it doesn't really extend beyond that. So yeah, that's a good point. Wow, amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah. So how? Okay. I don't even know. I have this question, but I feel like we'll see where it goes. How do you view working with ancestors may or may not differ from working with spirits of the land? Yeah.
Okay, that's a good question, actually, and I think it's good to be able to differentiate, because if you deal with the spirit world in general, which both the ancestors and all the other spirits are spirits, right? So we need to be able to recognize who we are actually dealing with, because it's not really as common as people make it to be, that there are those, malicious spirits who are looking to fuck you over. But that happens. So you need to be able to understand who you are dealing with. It's the same way that when you deal with people like, just getting to know somebody new, you need
Yeah.
to be able to recognize potential red flags and all of that, to know who they are and what they are potentially going to bring into your life. So with that being said, I think that the main difference between working with the ancestors and the spirits is that, especially if you work with blood ancestors, so ancestors with whom you share DNA, doesn't matter how distant, you will already have a tiny level of familiarity with them because of that blood connection alone, which can make things easier. Does not have to necessarily. Sometimes you may have ancestors who are assholes. That happens as well. And we have that in our bloodline. I feel most of us have something like that in our bloodline. But the familiarity does exist. And oftentimes, with the non-asshole ancestors, at least, many of them will actually care about your well-being and about, you kind of carrying on their line into the future, which I guess can help with connection. Whereas with spirits, for example, spirits of the land, you don't necessarily have that familiarity. You have to earn it from scratch. And I would say, because of the way that we live today, you actually have to earn it from a sub minus position, because we've, as humanity, we've not been that good, to the natural world in general. So many spirits might have beef with us by default, and you kind of have to show them that you are built different in a way, earn their trust, earn their respect in a way. So this is, I would say, the main difference that exists between working with ancestors and other spirits. But it doesn't have to be the case. Like, for example, ancestors are not just blood ancestors. They are not just people who have something to do with your DNA. Ancestors can be also humans who lived on the land that you live on in the past. So land ancestors, right? You can even think about ancestors as people who used to be working in the same profession as you many centuries ago, and they could become your spiritual ancestors in helping guide you to do your job well, right? So ancestors can definitely be much broader than just blood and DNA and all of that. You can really, but what stands at the kind of forefront of it is that most of them are probably human, at least the ones that you can connect with most easily. But if you go way back, like we came from amoebas, right? So like super simple organisms. So if you look at it very broadly and from an animistic lens, at the end of the day, all the spirits could be seen as our ancestors to some degree. I know it gets kind of convoluted in a way, but that's just the reality. I feel like that the spirit world doesn't really have the same kind of like hierarchies and categories that we have in our human society, where everything's really like co compartmentalized a lot. Like people are put into categories based on so many things like gender, like where you work, what your country is, what your color of hair is or eyes or whatever, what you prefer in terms of music or food, or, it's just countless categories. In the spirit world in general and in the natural world, I feel like that's not the case. We don't have those they don't have those hierarchies and those categories. Everything's very like more, you could say, blurry, but also just more free flowing, in the sense that if you look at those spirit connections more from their perspective, it doesn't really matter as much if it's an ancestor, a plant spirit, or a spirit of place, etc. It kind of all blends together, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I like that you talked about like sort of the different, we talked about categories, but they're like different sort of ancestors, whether it be your profession or the lands or your own DNA. And I think also because I talked to one of my previous guests, she does ancestral work, but she's adopted, right? And so that's like another thing, because like most people think like, well, how would you have connection? Because they think it's only through blood or DNA connection, right?
Yeah, no, definitely not. And I think people who only perceive it through this lens of blood and DNA are kind of fixated on this sometimes to their own detriment and g kind of going in those territories that are, kind of on the verge of like supremacy, that kind of stuff. Because if you are so fixated on your ancestry and like being so proud of your ancestors being like Viking or whatever, those kinds of people, right? Like that can just get really dangerous really fast. So I think it's important for people to understand that the ancestors aren't just your blood and DNA. It's so much more. And really just putting your ancestors just in that small category, and usually on based on some kind of DNA test that somebody does, right? That's just so narrow-minded, honestly.
Oh gosh, yeah. And then the other thing you said, and I, because I had done sort of, I've done ancestral work, and one of the things is you look at your kind of your tree, right? If you can do some research on your tree. And I kind of was like, oh, looked into the tree. I think it went back to like 500 or something. And it was like, oh, and then when you see how it sprouts, right? You're like, well, why wouldn't we all be related in some respect? You know what I mean? You're just like, it just
Right. There's
sprouts
so
so
many
much.
people.
So much. And it is kind of mind-boggling because you're like, I guess we're all related, and in the same thing of like related DNA by blood, by the spirit world and the things around us. It's like, yeah, it's like, whew, it's a lot to think about, but it's also very cool. So I
I
like that.
agree. Yeah.
And so on your Patreon, again, which I think people should definitely check out because it's so unique and wonderful offerings on there. You had for recent your Toad Pond offering for February, you had this really cool like overview about spirit flight and astral travel. So if you can talk about what that is for the audience and why do it in the first place?
Yeah, sure. I love this topic, spirit flight and those types of adjacent practices like trance work. They are foundational to my craft, as I was mentioning earlier, in a lot of ways because of the spirit work aspect. So I just love talking about this, honestly. For people who are not aware, spirit flight could be perceived as a term that's specifically used in traditional witchcraft and folk magic for something that maybe more broadly, people know as astral projection or out of body experiences, that kind of stuff. It's kind of, again, blurry because these experiences are not exactly experienced where when you are fully aware of everything. You are kind of in an in-between state of altered consciousness. So it's hard to really pinpoint, like, this is where spirit flight begins and ends, and this is where dream work begins and ends. They kind of, can blend together. But basically, all these practices have to do with achieving a state where, usually through trance, but there are other ways as well, where you can kind of, I suppose, unshackle yourself from the physical reality in one way or another in order to be able to travel to places. And this is often in more like shamanistic perceptions of the world. People usually explain this as traveling to the other worlds, which would usually be like the underworld, the upper world, or somewhere in the middle world, right? So that's what you basically want to achieve with that. It's spirit travel in a way. You could also see it this way. And you usually do that for purposes of doing anything and everything that has to do with spirit contact, sorry. So you might just go out there to talk to somebody in particular, to learn something, or to finish some unfinished business with the ancestors, for example. But you might also go somewhere to do some actual work that you were assigned to do by the spirits that you work with. You might go out there just to explore and learn more about the world beyond, our physical reality. There's just so many things. Basically, anything you can think of doing in the waking reality, you can also do that in spirit flight, but probably on different terms and with different rules, because those worlds don't necessarily work the same way that our world does, when we are in our physical bodies. So, I feel like those practices are really at the base of witchcraft practice. If you can enter a trance state, it's so much easier for you to achieve spirit contact and thus kind of collaborate on things that you want to do, achieve the work that you need to do, spells, whatever, right? It's very versatile. So I don't know what else to add, actually. I think that that's kind of the base.
Yeah, no, that's really great. I think I guess I do have one question about sort of like trance states. Yeah, I think people are very different in this. Like me personally, I enter trance like super easy. Like it's just like either drumming or when I do scrying, like Black Mirror scrying, and man, I just like
Love
boop.
that.
Oh, it's awesome. 'Cause like basically I'm sitting there and it's like boop. It's just like one little shift and it's like, oh, I'm seeing like the astral version of the room I'm in.
Yes.
Yes. And you're like, what is this? And then there's like beings like kind of flowing through the room. It's very weird, but very
Yeah.
cool.
I
So like,
love that. I love Black Mirror scrying as well, so I totally get what you mean.
oh, that's so cool. 'Cause like I've tried to explain this to some folks, and maybe they're not experiencing the same thing. So oh, thank goodness. So I guess my question would be, what are some methods for folks who maybe have a harder time getting into trance that would assist them in spirit flight, for instance?
Yeah, sure. You know what? I feel like this is such a complex topic, really,
That's true.
because anything can influence your ability to enter trance. And like, for example, for me, I usually don't have that much of an issue, but for example, when I was taking some new medication for half a year, I was unable to enter trance at all because it changed the my brain chemistry to the point where it was just impossible for me, and there was nothing I could do. So I think people need to be aware of this, that this is not just purely like skill based and something that you can train, and if you train it, you are like 100% sure to always achieve it. Sometimes like the outside kind of factors can make it very hard or even unavailable for some time. And those are like, as I mentioned, for me, for example, the medication, but this can also be stress or like being in a new environment, going through some life changes. I don't know, having a shitty day or being on a specific day of your menstrual cycle where things just don't align. There's just so many factors. So I want people to know that if this is not immediately working for you, it's not your fault and it doesn't mean that you're doing something wrong. It just could be any number of those outside factors that I mentioned. But in general, I feel like when it comes to entering trance, everybody needs to find their preferred method. So, like for example, for you mentioned Black Mirror scrying and how it's easy for you. I love that too, and it's so easy for me as well. And I could even like describe step by step what's always happening for me because it's always the fucking same, right? So that tells me that it's reliable for me. But for somebody else, they might be staring at the mirror and be like, what am I doing? Like, what the fuck is this, right? Like, this is useless. And that's fine. Like, that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with that person. They just need to find their own method. So you also mentioned drumming. I feel like drumming and basically using any type of primitive instruments to play them in a rhythmic fashion. So repeating, repeating, repeating until you go in a state where your brain kind of gets bored to the point where it switches off. And suddenly you are in a trance state. You are kind of, you know, everything feels more flowy and you are calm and relaxed. And it's just so great, right? So that's a good way for some folks. For others, it doesn't work at all again, right? Other things that you can try is various methods of scrying. We mentioned the mirror, but you can also scry in water outside, like in a pond or something. Just looking at the moon for a prolonged period of time is great. Staring at a candle, for example. What else? A hug stone, which is great, is that stone with a hole inside. You look through that hole and things start to kind of shift and warp over time as well. And you can enter trance through that. You can also use like prayer beads for that. For some people, the repetition of going through the beads and breathing can be enough, or like saying prayers or incantations for a prolonged period of time. All of this is about repetition, but you need to find your type of repetition that works for your brain, that helps kind of switch it off and kind of descend into the background so it doesn't get in the way and doesn't, you know, just focus randomly on things to kind of take you out of that relaxed state. Because trance will always feel relaxed unless there's one, I would say, kind of situation where it's different. And that's the kind of trance state that you enter where you, for example, go into the forest at night alone. You can imagine, like, you are scared.
Yeah, right.
Your heart is racing. Your eyes are, your pupils are dilated. You are just looking all over the place, trying to detect danger and something that wants to kill you, right?
Right.
That also, at some point, if you do that for a prolonged period of time, leads to a trance state. And I think that's very reliable because all of us get scared shitless when we do that. But probably not the most accessible because we would rather avoid those types of situations, right?
Yeah.
But if somebody listening to this is brave enough and never like has had success entering trance, maybe you can try this. Go out into the forest at night. Just see where it takes you, because at some point of being in this state of all your senses being so piqued because you are looking for danger, right? Trying to save your ass and not die, basically. At some point, your perception starts to shift and you begin to recognize patterns. And that's where you can see spirits, where you can hear them, when you can talk to them much easier than usual, really. So that's, I would say, the only type of trance state where you aren't really relaxed, but the opposite of it, right?
Yeah.
But the other methods are usually just nice, calm, relaxing, and you are entering through this relaxation state into a shift in consciousness where you can just perceive things a bit differently. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a state in between being awake and falling asleep. Like sometimes we experience that, where you are so relaxed. Like, I'm sure most of people experience this. You're almost falling asleep, but suddenly you have this like jerk reaction, like you are suddenly awake and stuff like that. So you just came out of a trance state of this kind of descent very, very deep into your body, or very deep outside of it sometimes, right?
Right.
So yeah, it's really interesting. It really kind of hard to put into words because everybody experiences that differently, but it's so, so fascinating to me, honestly. I love talking about it and like experimenting with different methods. It's just something that I could nerd out about forever.
Oh gosh. Yeah. It's very cool. Yeah. I love that you started out by talking about like everybody's biology and, you know, how your brain works is different. So, you know, don't feel like you can't do it. It's just, you know, you might have to try different methods. So I love that approach.
It's very important. Yeah. We don't really want anybody to feel left out and like, you don't have these special powers, so you don't belong in, you know, witchcraft practice. No, that's bullshit. Yeah. Like, everybody can do this. You just need to find your way.
Yeah. Perfect. So in putting this material together, did you learn something new while doing it, or?
I don't think I have, because everything I talk about, and that's just generally the way I approach, I guess, teaching or talking about things, is that I talk from my experience. So I try to, honestly, I try to avoid like going out into books and just picking something from the book and teaching it to folks as if it was something that I know firsthand. I try to avoid that because I think that's not authentic. Yeah. If it's not something that I've experienced myself and thus can talk about, like if I was awakened in the middle of the night and you ask me about this, I can explain it easily. If that's not the case, then I'm not going to be talking about it to people in a kind of teaching way. I feel that that just would be unfair to people. So honestly, I haven't learned anything new in putting this all together. It's mostly just, you know, my experience.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's really good to know. So people can kind of trust that you've gone through the difference, the rigmarole of like figuring it out for yourself. So that's great.
Yeah, definitely.
So what are some upcoming projects or events that you would like for us to know about?
I feel like this year is very busy for me because actually I'm currently writing a book. It's
Cool.
going to be coming out hopefully next year if everything goes well.
Yeah.
I can't talk about the details, sadly, because that's the reality of how things work these days. But you can kind of expect to read a book from me that's about the things that we talked about today, with special focus on my background in Polish folk magic. So that's very exciting.
Sweet.
Other than that, something that I'm doing on a regular basis are the things that are the projects that are always ongoing on my Patreon, which I have kind of two group projects that we do. First one is just a book club where we work through, you know, chapters of books about witchcraft and work through the kind of practical, you know, prompts to better our practice. So that's what we do every month. We are currently working with one of the books by Lee Morgan, whom I have mentioned earlier at the beginning of the video. And another project that I do is what you mentioned, the Toad Pond. I love the name, by the way. It's my favorite.
It's
the
cute,
Toad
yeah.
Pond is a group project where we kind of pick a theme each month and people vote on things that they want to learn together and practice together and then share experiences. So this month it's actually Spirit Flight, but who knows what's going to happen next month. Folks are definitely going to be voting on something exciting. So these are the things that I actually do on a kind of monthly basis, the projects that are always ongoing for me.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, you're a busy, busy, busy lady for sure. And another thing I wanted to talk about, because I just saw it the other day that you posted about, was hashtag occult tea. I don't know if you want to talk just a little bit about it. I know you have, like, of course, what you put together is so thought out and thorough. So definitely people need to check that out on your Instagram. This is where I found it. But can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, of course. Thank you. So this is a project that I actually came up with in collaboration with two people. So Ella Harrison and Leah Middleton, they are both on Instagram and YouTube as well. They are much more better known than myself. But we just so happened that we kind of came together on this topic of touching on subjects that are kind of problematic in our community. So speaking broadly, the occult community, but more kind of close to home, I guess, would be the witchcraft community. So talking about things like how social media and being online and consuming content online about witchcraft and the occult is actually impacting us as practitioners, as human beings. Does it really help us grow as practitioners, or does it make us feel less than others because, I don't know, somebody else's setup is more aesthetic than yours or whatever? Also kind of touching on subjects of abuse of grifters and people who kind of fake things to take advantage of you. There's a lot of that in our community, and I feel like it's important to especially make the kind of newer folks aware that this is something that's been ongoing for years, like people stealing somebody's identity to take advantage of it, or lying about having experience in certain paths of witchcraft to monetize that, like, for example, pretend that they're doing rituals for people, you know. That just happens. That there's so much. And by putting out this tag out there, I learned so much more actually about like the dark side of things that honestly I've been kind of trying to process it the past few days because this just came out. Oh my God, it's overwhelming, honestly. But the idea behind the tag is that I'm not just there like talking to people and telling them everything they need to know about all those kind of darker aspects of the online witchcraft world, but everybody, every single person in the community is invited to share their experiences based on a number of questions and prompts to kind of touch on the things that hurt them, that make them not feel seen in community, maybe ways that they were taken advantage of, etc., so that we can actually hear from each other and have each other's backs, you know, when it comes to that. So yeah, it's a project. Let me tell you.
Yes.
Yeah, it's intense. Like it. It's really intense. And it's also been getting some backlash, honestly, because it seems like some people don't want others to know this stuff. So
really?
It just shows how, you know, important it is to make people aware and open and not afraid to be sharing. The idea for this tag even came up from the fact that I was talking with my community about these things, and many people are just scared of, you know, exposing grifters, of telling who took advantage of them, because they are scared that they are going to get, you know, backlash for it. So if we band as a community and talk about it in huge numbers, maybe it's going to be easier for people to come out and not be scared, you know? So that's the whole idea. If anybody listening to this, if you would like to participate, I would love that. Like, make a video, make a podcast episode, write a blog post, whatever. Just use the hashtag occultee. I know, very kind of cheeky, but
it's
love
cute.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would really love to just hear from people, honestly, so we can have each other's backs and not feel like everything that's happening in this community is just people backstabbing each other and trying to kind of grow off of somebody's, you know, failure. Cause that's not the vibe we are going for.
Right. Yeah. Oh, what a great project. And so again, like really thoughtful and a great contribution to the community, you know, to like open up these spaces. And you're right. Like there's, you know, the main thing I was, you know, when I saw it was thinking about, oh, you know, how people, especially on Instagram, they put up these beautiful like altars and stuff like that. And it's like, well, the reality is like, you know, my altar might
it's
have
not
like,
like that.
Yeah. It's like sometimes, yeah, when I clean it up, it'll look nicer, but when I'm using it every day, it's just, you know, matches everywhere, you know, like all sorts of stuff.
Same. My altar doesn't look like those on the, you know, the reels and all of that. It's all curated and it's staged to look like that. Because sadly, this I feel like is the sad reality of connecting with people online over something like witchcraft, is that we kind of become the slaves of the algorithm. We become the product. So many people, if they feel like they, you know, many people just want to support themselves, like get some, a few extra bucks every month to get something nice or whatever. So many people rely on these platforms for support. And if those platforms force them to only create fake content that looks good and has no substance, because that's the only thing that gets engagement, they then are kind of forced to, you know, dumb it all down, make it all just about aesthetics and all of that. And there's nothing wrong with pretty things. I mean, I love pretty things.
Yeah.
But that's not witchcraft alone. Like, witchcraft is behind all that. And it's great to share that. But when a platform forces you to dumb it down so that you can support yourself, that's just so unethical, but also something that we can do nothing about if we want to support ourselves. So it's a hard topic, but I feel like giving people the opportunity to just be open about the struggles that come with all this creates space for, you know, support, for healing, for understanding each other, and also for the kind of newer practitioners in the community to know the reality of it. Because many young people, like, they come to this, they see people who are much older and are already like authorities because they have so many, you know, followers, for example, and they might not know that things don't always look this way and haven't been looking this way like 10 years ago, for example, where when TikTok wasn't a thing, right? So giving people perspective and hold space for people, I feel it's really important.
Yeah, I'm so glad that it's wonderful. So I'm glad you and your cohorts are putting that together. And yeah, I'm very looking forward to looking through all the hashtags, because I haven't had a chance yet, but I'm like, now I'm gonna nerd out and read through it.
There's a lot already.
Oh man, okay, I'm so excited. So where can folks find out more about you and all the really cool stuff that you're up to?
So I'm around on the internet on various platforms, especially Instagram, YouTube kind of semi-regularly, and Patreon, where I post the most regularly. All of those are available under the name Polish Folk Witch. So it's, I feel, fairly easy to Google to find. And yeah, what I do is mostly talk about Polish folk magic, Polish folklore, and kind of traditions that have been cultivated by our peoples, but also just broadly, like traditional witchcraft skills and cultivating community so that we can do these things together and motivate each other to, have a nice practice. So yeah, that's mostly what I do. And again, Polish folk witch everywhere.
Very cool. Yeah, it is very easy to find you. You did great branding on like being able to find you. It's awesome.
Honestly, I know nothing about branding. It's all just random.
I know, but it's perfect. So yeah, you're very Googleable, which is great. So what last thing is like, what are some words of wisdom that you would like to leave us with today?
Words of wisdom. I think for the kind of climate, I guess, that I'm in and around recently, I would like for folks to remember how community is so important, how connection is so important, how none of us are an island. And doesn't matter what you do in life, but that includes witchcraft and any kind of spiritual practices. You can't really do any of it alone. You need to have a community, and that be either a community of humans around you, but also the community of spirits around you. So just remembering, and for folks who feel alone, who feel like they have nobody, you are never alone. There are always spirits around you. Your ancestors, the non-asshole ones that we talked about, those, they always have your back, and they are always there to see you succeed and see you be doing well in life. So the words of wisdom, I guess, for me, that are important at this time, is to always remember that connection and the community are at the core of what we do as witches, as practitioners of any spiritual discipline, really.
Oh, beautifully said, and always good to think about, and keep in mind as well. So, thank you so much, Joanna. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. I'm so glad I was invited and could
Yeah.
share a bit about the things that I'm into and nerd out together about some of the things. Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. It was such a treat having the most awesome Joanna, the Polish Folk Witch, on the show today. Do check out the Occult Tea hashtag on YouTube and Instagram, and absolutely take a look at the Polish Folk Witch Patreon and all the wonderful offerings that Joanna has for her members there. Do remember to like, follow, and subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform. It really helps us grow. Thank you for listening and being an important part of the Casual Temple.